There is a court-martial going on right now of a an Army lieutenant. First Lieutenant Aaron Watata is his name. He's from Hawaii, joined up in the military after 9/11, and last year he and his unit were ordered to Iraq, and Lieutenant Watata refused to go. He did not file for conscientious objector status. He said, I'd be willing to go to Afghanistan, but I will not go to Iraq. And he essentially says that this war is morally wrong, that our military involvement in Iraq is a breach of American law. He said in a video statement last June, quote, as the order to take part in an illegal act is ultimately unlawful as well, I must, as an officer of honor and integrity, refuse that order. He is the first officer to refuse to go, even though, by my count, there have been over 100 soldiers who have been prosecuted through the military justice system for refusing to go to Iraq. A bunch of others have simply left the country. Some of them have gone to Canada, etc. So I've asked Todd Ensign to come on today. Todd is the director of Citizen Soldier, and we've had Todd on the show before in cases like this, and I thought we'd call on his expertise in the Lieutenant Watata story. Todd, how are you today?
Well, I'm fine. It's nice to be back with you. I am also an attorney, and we did handle a case 2 years ago now, almost three, that was similar, and that represented an enlisted person named Camilo Mejia.
Mm-hmm.
He took the same position that he could not. He had been in Iraq. His case, in some ways, a little bit stronger because he had been there and seen the war for 5 months, so he had personal knowledge, you know, of what, as he saw it, what the illegal activities were. He said, "I'm not going back, and I am arguing that I have an international law duty not to go, an American law duty too." At any rate, we went to trial. The military judge, which is the same thing that was done in Aaron Watata's case, ruled in advance of court-martial that the issue of international law or domestic law in relation to the conduct of the war was a political question. That's a court. That's a lawyer buzzword.
Mm-hmm.
And the political question, therefore, could not be heard in a military court, and therefore he barred us from making any reference or any offers of proof of international law violations. It's the same thing that's happened in Aaron Watata's case just recently.
Right. And what happened to your client?
He was then put on trial. What happened, of course, is that once you remove the issue of international or domestic law responsibility, you pretty much eliminate any legal issues in the case. The issue becomes, did you go on the day that you were ordered to go, and did you know you were supposed to go? And if you did, it pretty much makes it into an open and shut case. And that's what happened. And he ended up receiving a year in prison, a bad conduct discharge, and he was busted down to E1, the lowest rank. So a fairly severe sentence. However, Aaron Watata is facing 7 years in prison because he's also charged with two counts of conduct unbecoming an officer because, as you probably know, he made speeches at a Vets for Peace convention and at one other rally where he said that he would advise others to not go if they thought international law prevented them from doing so. And that was deemed to be conduct unbecoming an officer. So he's facing not just refusal to go, but also those other two charges. And he's at a general court, which means they could give him a 7-year prison term, which would be pretty harsh.
Okay. I actually hear that some of the things that were he was on court-martial for, he was being court-martialed for, have been dropped, and now the maximum sentence is 4 years. But whatever it is a moot point right now, because it comes down to a couple of important questions here. One, I can't remember if this was the case with your client, but it certainly is with Lieutenant Watata, that he volunteered. He joined up to go, and not only that, joined up and went through officer training and became a first lieutenant in the United States Army. And when you do that, you've got to sign on to the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And the Uniform Code of Military Justice says many things about what you can say and what you can't say, one of which is that as a commissioned officer, you, quote, cannot use contemptuous words against the president, the vice president, Congress, the secretary of defense. It lists a whole bunch of other things.
Mm-hmm. Those charges were dropped, and I know that in Aaron's case. But no, there's no question that Mr. Harris, that the that the Army, the military, as you know, for the last 33 years has been a volunteer force.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. People sign a contract. They go down to the enlistment center and they sign a contract. That's true. That is a big difference from someone who in the Vietnam era who was drafted, who was compelled to serve, you know, mm-hmm. under involuntary activation.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. However, that doesn't really eliminate the question about international conduct. Let's just take this colonel right now. About 2 weeks ago, the Army announced they're going to prosecute a colonel who was a reserve colonel for his conduct at Abu Ghraib, his failure to, you know, control the torture of some of the detainees there. That's an example where the Army has said, you must conform to a certain standard of behavior, or we will charge you under the criminal statutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not being critical of that. That's a whole other question. His name is Lieutenant Colonel Stephen L. Jordan, by the way. I'm just saying that the military does recognize that in certain instances there is a standard of conduct, and you can't just argue, well, hey, I was just doing what I was told, or they said just make sure those prisoners talk, or whatever.
Right. You can't use the Nuremberg defense when you're going to be committing a war crime. But
exactly.
the question is whether serving and being and going to Iraq when you're told to go to Iraq with your unit is a war crime. And I think that most people would say it probably is not.
Well, I technically agree with you on that, except what Tata is saying and what Camilo Mejia was saying was that once I get over there, I'm going to be told to go out into the streets or do this or do that. For example, one simple example would be failure to distinguish between combatants and non-combatants. That's a war crime. We put people actually to death. German officers were put to death at Nuremberg for that offense, where they just would go into a community and wipe the community out and say, well, we thought, you know, they were enemy or they were our opponents. And in some ways, you could argue that in Iraq, that goes on a lot. And that's what Tata was saying. I don't want to go over there and be sent into a situation where I'm going to be told, see that building over there? Clear it out. And you have no idea who's in there or whether they're combatants or what they are. Maybe they're 8-year-old children.
Except for the fact that he said he doesn't want conscientious objector status because he was willing to go to Afghanistan. And the same thing applies in Afghanistan. We're not talking about fighting a war where the enemy wears a uniform. And he might be in the same situation. You know, go in there and get the Taliban out. Well, it turns out it's not the Taliban, and you're wiping out innocent civilians. If he's willing to go to one place, how can he refuse to go to the other?
Well, now, on that one, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to be a little bit lawyerly and say I don't agree with that position that he took. I can't. Obviously, he takes what positions he wants. I actually agree with you that you can't make a meaningful distinction between the two wars. And but that's what he does. So that's his position. But the deeper question is how do we have our military? How do we ensure ourselves that our military complies with both American domestic law and with international law, to which, you know, sometimes people are confused about international law. International law means treaties that we have signed as a country, and they are, the Supreme Court has said, that is the same as domestic law. So these aren't esoteric, nice things to do. They're really the law which binds this country. You know, the American government wrote the Nuremberg Charter, really. We really wrote the London Charter, rather, which created the Nuremberg Standard. So we played a big role, and I think that's a fine thing to do. We played a big role after World War II in saying, in the future, militaries cannot argue domestic rules or domestic policy. They have to obey certain basic international standards. And that's what we said as a country. And I think that was an honorable position.
Right. But isn't Watada's position here that anyone who goes over there will be committing a war crime, and he does not want to do that? Because I don't think you could say that of the 140,000 Americans who we have there now, not to mention the tens of thousands who have been there and back and back and back, right, that every one of them is a war criminal for having served over there.
Well, no, I agree. Of course, I agree with that. He's saying, though, that he doesn't want to be put in a situation where that could potentially occur. And it is a difficult problem, because how else could you raise it? Once you're over there, obviously, like Camilla was there 5 months. While he was there, he saw things that were going on that he considered objectionable or criminal. You know, children killed, people shot at car checkpoints, and he found that also saw abusive detainees. And he said, well, at the time, I couldn't do anything about it. I'm a combat soldier. I'm in a combat unit. You know, and we can all understand that. You don't start saying, "Then, wait a minute, guys. I think what we're doing right now is a war crime. That's one, it'd be kind of dangerous to do that, and two, I don't think it's viable to try to raise it. So the point Natana's making, as I understand it, is if I go, I might be put in an atrocity-producing situation. I don't want to be in that situation, and I have a duty under international law not to carry out those acts, and therefore I will, in anticipation of that, not go. That's his position. I agree with it's not. It'd be a, if his case was upheld, it would raise some serious questions about how are we going to deploy an army, a military to a foreign battle.
That's, yeah, I think that's a very slippery slope. Any member of the United States military could say, "I don't want to go to war because bad things might happen there that I don't want to have happen, or that might violate international law." That would be restraint before the action, wouldn't it?
Well, but the problem is how does one evoke those standards? See, that's the problem. Everyone was embarrassed by, let's take Abu Ghraib a minute. Everyone was very embarrassed by that, all the way up the chain of command, including obviously people in the Congress. It was very embarrassing to have those photographs, see what was going on there. You know, at the time, we're talking about the abuse of the detainees at Abu Ghraib prison. But how would we have people raise that issue, you see? That's the problem. And in fact, as you know, one of the reasons that was exposed is because one of the guys who'd taken a lot of the photos got home, had a really deep moral kind of crisis about it, and turned the photos over to the military. That's how we learned about
and
it.
And have, by the way, since been persecuted by the people in his own hometown wrongly, yeah. But he did the right thing. He was
That's
the
right.
one who was acting heroically in that case.
That's
and
true.
we need more people yeah. like him, and maybe yeah. Lieutenant Watada and your client, Mojia, could have been the kind of guys who would be like that, who would go over there and see an atrocity taking yeah. place, and being the ones who raise their hand and say, "Hey, something was going on here that's completely un-American. Right. And I'm going to stand up right. for it now, not at Fort Lewis, just outside of Seattle."
Well, we can agree it's a difficult problem. Let's take the My Lai incident, because that's a good example of how to explain the issue. That's the one you recall near the end of the massacre. The soldiers had already killed about 450, 500 Vietnamese civilians. Hugh Thompson, and I'm sure you know his case, he was flying over in a helicopter. And he saw what was going on, and he said, "We're going to put down here right now." He was an officer. He put down in the middle of the fire, whatever was going on, and he said, "Stop it. No more firing." Now, he had a gunner on his helicopter, and he told the gunner to train the guns on the American soldiers. So, in other words, he had the ability to take action, which the average soldier wouldn't have, obviously. At any rate, he said, and he did probably save some lives, I mean, by doing that. And so most people, I think, would say that was good. That was the right thing to do. I mean, to see people by the hundreds being mowed down, they're all clearly civilians, that's bad, and it's good for our soldier to intervene. And I think Thompson, who just passed away recently, I think, you know, he is generally seen as sort of a hero. But the point is that's a pretty unusual set of circumstances. You know, the average soldier is out there right along with the other soldier. He doesn't have a helicopter. He doesn't have a door gunner. And he doesn't really have the power to say, "Guys, stop this. This is wrong. We all know this is wrong. We shouldn't be doing this."
But it must also be said that the average soldier who does go to serve in Iraq is not Lieutenant William Calley and is not one of the men serving under him slaughtering innocents on a daily basis like that. We have lots of them, tens of thousands of people in uniform, both men and women, who have been serving honorably in Iraq, doing what they were told to do.
Right.
Whether you disagree with the mission or not,
right.
See, that's what I think Watada's case is here. He disagrees with what we're doing in Iraq and therefore doesn't want to use that and is using this umbrella of, "I don't want to be involved in illegal things." The Uniform Code of Military Justice, Article 87, says any person subject to this chapter who through neglect or design misses the movement of a ship, aircraft, or unit with which he's required in the course of duty to move shall be punished as a court-martial may direct. There is a court-martial going on right now for First Lieutenant Aaron Watada of the United States Army. The court-martial is going on in Fort Lewis, which is just outside of Seattle, Washington. He's a member of the 3rd Brigade, 2nd Infantry Division, and joined the Army back in March of 2003. Last year, he and his unit were called up to go to Iraq, but he has called the Iraq War, quote, a horrible breach of American law, and said he has a duty to refuse illegal orders. We're going to include your phone calls in just a moment at 314-436-7900 and toll-free 800-925-1120. We're talking with Todd Ensign, who's the director of Citizen Soldier, which you can find online at citizen-soldier.org. He represented Staff Sergeant Camilo Mejia, who 3 years ago was convicted of not going to Iraq. Staff Sergeant Camilo was sentenced to a bad conduct discharge and 1 year of hard labor. Did your client, Sergeant Mejia, or does Lieutenant Watada have any recourse outside of a military courtroom?
I would say no. He is not. There's no alternative remedy. The convictions, of course, can be appealed, and in Camilo's case, we just filed his appeal, and at some point later on, we might, I wouldn't rule out the chance we might prevail on one of our arguments. But in Watada's case, you mentioned he wasn't a CO, and I just wanted to explain that for people, because people often don't realize that you can join the military. When you join the military, actually, you swear that you are not a CO.
CO being conscientious objector.
Right. Yes. You say, I am not a CO, that's why you can join the military. It makes sense. Once you're in uniform, people often, you know, remember, we're talking about kids that are 18, 19 years old. They're young. They don't know much about the world, maybe. They go in, and they get into service, and they're training, they're abroad, whatever. And they sometimes, as in Camilla's case, come to believe that they are conscientiously opposed to participation in war in any form. And so that you can file, one can file, and people do every day, conscientious objector applications while you're on active duty. And Camilo did that. Now, Aaron Watada has said, I am not a CO. I'm basing my opposition to the war purely on international law and domestic law grounds. So the significance of that, Paul, is that people do learn and change their views after they've sworn in. You mentioned earlier it's an all-volunteer force. That's true. It is. But people often don't have any real understanding what it would mean to fire a gun at somebody or how you would feel about being put in those kinds of situations until they're actually in it. And that's what happened to Camilo. He comes back from Iraq after 5 months, and he says, I am a CO. Now, actually, his CO claim was eventually denied as well. But I believe that in his case, he was a legitimate CO.
And in Watada's case, as recently as the summer of 2005, he had been willing to go to Iraq, but he says he changed his mind when he learned more about the war. Now, I want to talk and give me an attorney's view on this, because he's also said that some of the things that he said are protected free speech. Part of that officer misconduct charge is that he spoke out and that he attacked the war as illegal and said that the Army was committing war crimes and that the Bush administration had lied and been deceitful here. The Army is going after him in the court-martial for that, but he says that his remarks represent protected free speech. Now, I am a civil libertarian myself, and I use the First Amendment to make a living. So I know a little bit about free speech, but I also know that free speech comes with consequences. For instance, if I were to go up and down the street denouncing the company that I work for, there's very little chance that I would continue to be working for the company. Isn't that the same thing that applies to Lieutenant Watada?
Well, yeah, that would be one aspect of it. Another aspect would be that an officer, after all, is in the chain of command. I mean, the military, the key thing in the military, anyone who's served knows this, is chain of command. Who is above you, who's below you, leadership, all that sort of thing. And having the lines of authority be respected. That is necessary to a military. A military has to have that sort of system. It's a matter of to what degree. And it's been upheld. You may recall the case of Dr. Howard Levy back in the Vietnam War, and he was charged with conduct unbecoming an officer because he wouldn't train Green Berets in medical techniques because he believed they were being used for torture of Vietnamese. And that case went up to the Supreme Court. It's a pretty famous case. And the Supreme Court said, and he argued, it's too vague. It's just too vague to say conduct unbecoming. How the hell can you know what you're not supposed to do? And the Supreme Court said, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but they said, no, in a military context, people can know what conduct unbecoming is, and therefore they upheld that statute. And that's, of course, what Watada is charged with. The point of it is that there is an expectation, I think legitimate, that an officer is going to lead by example. They're going to respect the chain of command below and above them. And I think that's what they're going after Watada for, is saying to other soldiers, you should not go, you should follow my example. And you know, it's a fine line. Now, I, like you, a civil libertarian, I would argue whenever possible, free speech should be accepted, should be tolerated, no matter how stupid. I hear people say things all the time, we all do, that are seem incredibly stupid, and I can't believe they can believe it, but I certainly support their right to say it. The question in Wataz's case is going to be, does an officer have an extra duty, an extra high standard to which he's to be held in terms of leading other soldiers? And that's going to be a question in his court-martial.
Yeah, I have a friend, his name is Hal, who just left the United States Air Force after 25 years of service. And he he's got his pension and all the rest of the stuff. And he and I have had private conversations in which he has denounced various things done by various presidents in this country. And,
right.
and even people who he worked for in the military, he disagreed with some of the things that were being done at the Air Force Academy out in Colorado Springs, etc.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said to him, you know, why don't you speak out about this? He says, because I'm in the Air Force. I am an officer of the United States Air Force, and I don't do that. Once I leave the Air Force, then I may make my voice publicly heard. But as soon as I signed those papers and agreed to take this position, very much like me not denouncing the company I worked for, he would not denounce the people he worked for. And I think the same applies when it comes to free speech.
Well, but just to quickly respond, and that is that we remember after World War II, the German lawyers were pretty good. The German officers' lawyers were pretty good, and they said, this guy was told to do this, put the Jews on the train. That was his job. Those were his orders. They came from above. They were on their face. Lawful orders. That's what they said. And I was doing, and Eichmann said that in Israel. He said, I'm doing what I was ordered to do. I didn't make the orders. I was told to carry them out.
But again, that's the difference between seeing war crimes, witnessing war crimes, having knowledge of war crimes, and disagreeing with policy, which to me is a very, very different thing. Todd, I've got to run here, but
okay.
I appreciate your time
as always. I enjoyed it. Hopefully, before too long, we can talk some more.
I hope so.
Thanks
too. Todd Ensign, Director of Citizen Soldier. You can find him online at citizen-soldier.org. We're going to take a break and then come back, and I promise to get to your phone calls in a moment at 314-436-7900. Toll free, 800-925-1120, or email Paul Harris at KMOX.com.